Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
What can you talk of so that people don't have to necessarily listen to me just talk psychobabble? But what can you say about what your knowledge is about why the meds work? So in other words, for those who think it's just a kind of get over it, kind of an attitude shift that depression is about, why is it more than that? What do you know about it biologically?
And for fellow professionals listening in, not fellow professionals to you, not to me, I apologize for completely butchering this or misrepresenting. So please know that this is not medical information, merely one Mormon housewife's interpretation of true facts. You know, I mean, mental illness, it really is in your head. I'm on a different medication than Celexa now, but it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. Does that sound right? The mm-hmm. SSRI?
Yeah, that sounds
right. And, so your brain is either not producing or not utilizing or making too much of a certain thing. There's so many families of drugs out there for mental illness. And, you know, I've only really used one, the same family of one. Sorry, I'm not being particularly articulate. And so what that does is there's chemicals in your brain that aren't working right, or they're not doing what they need to do. And so the medication helps those chemicals do more or less of what they need to do. So if your brain's producing too much of something, then it can help you with that. Now, could you get positive effects by regularly exercising and by having a better diet so you don't have such volatile blood sugar levels? Absolutely. But I couldn't even get to that point because I didn't want to be alive. So,
well, it's interesting too, the distinctions between different types of depression. Some people can have a great diet and actually exercise regularly, and they still have what we call biological depression.
Yeah.
Which is that just there's certain chemicals or something incorrect in the brain that's doing something, you know, like you
right.
said, incorrect. And there's lots of other things like postpartum depression or
right.
situational depression. And sometimes people can get depressed because of a situation. So in other words, there's a reason why they're depressed. Somebody has died or somebody's gone through a divorce.
Or you're 16 and your boyfriend breaks up with
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
I'm just guessing.
Right. And some people will have an experience like that, and because they have biological depression, it will kind of trigger that. Or some people will just have depression because of that situation.
Right.
But if that depression stays for a long time, what they have found is that the chemistry then in the brain can change at that point. So even if you didn't have biological depression to begin with,
then
now all of a sudden you're, because you've been depressed for so long,
right?
Now you do kind of have biological depression, and that's where the medication can be so helpful.
Yeah. And I think too, I don't think that medication, I don't see it as like a panacea that like, mm-hmm. oh, you just need medication and then you're done. Because especially in my situation where I had spent a whole year in particularly negative thought patterns, it was a whole, okay, I need to change the way I think about myself. And so the problem is with depression and postpartum depression is you stay in these thought patterns, and those are just as difficult to break as what the chemicals are or not doing right. in your brain. So,
right.
I mean, I don't think there's just one approach that would particularly solve it. You know, right. as we've mentioned, it's not a one size fits all thing like, oh, well, she took antidepressants and that miraculously cured it. It's not that.
Did you do other things like other types of treatment as far as therapy or anything like that along with the meds, or did you mainly go the medical route?
No, I mostly went the medical route. I mean, I did have several sessions with the psychiatrist. You know, she wanted to see me. I just like I had planned to for a year, I ultimately took up exercise and not that I'm saying that I do that to this day, but at the time, and I was exercising 4 or 5 days a week, and that really helped dramatically.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exercise is probably one of the best things for most mental health disorders. Yeah. At the same time, it's like we said earlier, if you're so depressed you can't get out of bed, then exercise is not really a realistic
then
goal.
Then it really doesn't even feel like an option.
Right.
So.
Right. Which.
Because when you can't leave your room.
Yeah. And exercise. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's the danger in that is if you set unrealistic goals, then you're more prone to that guilt we were talking about, which of course doesn't help those negative thoughts. And right. That doesn't help depression. So it's a very cyclical type of problem. Okay. So tell me about then, you thought this was going to be short term that you
did. Yeah. I thought it would be kind of short term, although it was working and I did not want to make the same mistake that I knew anecdotally that other depression patients made, which is, oh, I feel so much better. I don't need the medication anymore. Well, yeah, the reason you feel better is because you're on medication.
Right.
So I knew I didn't want to just stop it on my own. Right. We knew that we wanted to have another child. And so I had discussed with my psychiatrist, you know, what options would be for, you know, what should I do when we wanted to start trying to get pregnant? What should we do? And her recommendation was that I stay on the antidepressant that I was on, Celexa, until I found out that I was pregnant, and then go off, and then we would monitor and see how we did. And so I did. I stayed on the antidepressant for a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, my little girl, the youngest, was now 2. So a little over a year. Got pregnant, went off the, on purpose, got pregnant on purpose, right, went off, right. Not that that matters, but it was, went off the antidepressant, and probably when I was about 16 or 17 weeks pregnant, just noticed what I would call spiraling down. So it wasn't as dark as it had been when it had gotten really, really bad, but I could feel myself
going back
to that place. And I did not want to go back to that place. It was an emotional luxury that I did not want to afford. I did not want to choose that for myself or my family. It was too difficult and we couldn't function that way. So I went back to the psychiatrist, and she actually put me on a different medication. They had had Paxil before, but they had come out with a controlled release version,
mm-hmm.
Since I had originally got on the Celexa. And so she put me on the lowest dose of Paxil CR. They obviously don't have studies on Paxil CR in pregnant women or nursing women mm-hmm. because people aren't going to sign up to do that to their babies. But it seemed to be the one that was secreted the least in breast milk.
Okay.
And so she recommended that and I went on it and, you know, I don't know that I can articulate an exact difference, but I liked it a lot better than the Celexa. Okay. And I don't know if it was the controlled release, if it was because it was the Paxil, I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went on that when I was 17 weeks pregnant and that was 7 years ago and
still on it.
And still on it, yeah.
And you used it through the pregnancy?
I used it through that pregnancy, through nursing, through a fourth pregnancy, through nursing. And I remember at one point, even once I had started the Paxil CR, thinking, you know, at some point down the road, you know, after I've, you know, maybe when the kids, you know, maybe when this next baby's a little older, I think I'd like to try going off and see how I do. And then I thought, wait, but if this is working, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. And I even remember being at a friend's house. I was actually visiting teaching, but I don't know if I can bring that up. Anyway, but I was at a friend's house something came up about postpartum depression. We happened to be mentioning it and she, her sweet little sweet thing had just, no one in her family never had it. She hadn't known anybody who had it. It just seemed like kind of one of those myths that you talk yourself out of. And I said, oh, no, I actually had postpartum depression really bad with my second child. And she's like, oh, what did you do? I said, well, I took medication. I actually still take medication. She said, oh, but you don't seem depressed. And yeah, that's what that's what medication does. It makes so you're not depressed. That's why it's an antidepressant. Yeah, it was really cute. But, yeah.
How helpful, though, for somebody like that to be able to listen to, you know, your perspective on that.
Oh, I hope so. She probably brushed it off as talk of a crazy woman.
I hope not. I think that can be, well, that's the whole purpose, obviously, of what we're doing tonight.
Is, right.
You know, hopefully reaching out and helping others know that they're not alone by any means of the imagination.
No,
and
no.
Many people. So going back to the meds and kind of your fears about whether or not this was going to adversely affect your, you know, your fetus or then your
right.
newborn baby. My understanding is that these meds are classified in the C category. I don't know if you've heard that, A, B, C,
sounds
D,
familiar. Yeah.
And I think then goes to X or something. So A would be like basically your prenatals, like,
right.
You know, vitamins. B, I think, are things like Motrin or, aspirin, you know, things that,
okay,
maybe Tylenol, that are kind of safe for use
right.
in pregnancy, that aren't really that much of a risk. And then C is kind of like,
And there is a risk, absolutely. But for me, because I had seen how bad it could be, to me, the risk was worth it because I needed to be healthy for the two kids I already had.
Right.
I needed to be healthy for the baby that I was going to have. I needed to be healthy for my husband, but mostly I needed to be healthy for me.
Hmm.
And yeah, I needed to take care of other people, but I needed to take care of me. And so I did pray about it. And it was more of, this is what I'm planning to do.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that shouldn't happen, I might need something like an angelic visitation because it's going to take a lot to have me not go on this med.
Fault aligning or something.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was more like, hey, FYI, here's my plan.
Yeah.
So, because I just, to me, the risk, yeah, it could harm the baby. But there was going to be so much more harm to the family. That would be irreparable potentially, that I felt the risk was worth it. And the psychiatrist that I was seeing at the time, given the history, felt that way as well.
Right.
So
what about your OBGYN? Was she part or he part of the plan?
For that pregnancy, I actually ended up seeing the certified nurse midwife because I liked her better than
okay.
the OBGYN.
Okay.
And yeah,
she well.
Absolutely agreed that, you know, and she was very, I don't know that she was like a pill pusher. I mean, she was definitely, you know, advocated exercising during pregnancy and eating healthy during pregnancy and cutting out the sugars during pregnancy. I mean, very health oriented.
Right.
But knowing me and knowing my history, she felt like absolutely it was worth any potential risk
right.
to the baby.
Well,
I will
finding-
say he's my sweetest baby.
Your sweetest baby. He was all, you know.
Woo! He was great.
This
yeah.
antidepressant feels good. Oh, funny. Well, what I was going to say is some of the risks that they're finding out now about people who suffer with depression or anxiety throughout pregnancy and won't get on the medication because they're afraid of that. There are other risk factors such as premature labor, all kind, you know, obviously suicide
yeah.
is the biggest risk,
right.
but, you know, a lot of other kind of things that the stress and the depression also affect your baby.
Well, yeah. And stress when you're pregnant is, I mean, in my mind, and this is just me, this isn't based on any medical advice that I've been given, but to me, the stress and just all that angst and anxiety was, I thought that would be more damaging,
yeah.
you know, with, all that cortisol jumping around in the fetus than
right.
anything else I could doing. Plus, you know, because I do consider myself as someone who practices my faith, I couldn't separate it from the spiritual aspect. And I didn't think spiritually that I wanted to be in a place pregnant where I hated my baby and hated being pregnant and hated being a mother. I didn't want to do that.
Right.
And there's the guilt again, you know, I've been blessed with these wonderful things. How can I hate it? I'm wrong to do that, you know, and feeling guilty, but I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So for me,
mm-hmm.
it made sense.
Right. So going down the road of kind of more of your spiritual beliefs, and cultural beliefs, you know, this role of motherhood is so important, you know, as part of Mormon doctrine. And, you know, kind of like you're saying, accepting this role and loving it, and that it somehow comes naturally to us, you know, to all women, it must come naturally. We're natural nurturers and comforters. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're finding yourself like with your second child, not having those feelings. Did you feel like that affected the bonding with your baby? You know, they talk about bonding, and then also how did it affect your spirituality?
Yeah, I think it did affect my bonding with her. I mean, and that's in retrospect.
Right.
Yeah, I really think it did. I remember watching her through her crib slats crying when she was 7 months old, you know, and I was mentally not healthy and thinking, why am I even trying if she won't turn out later, and just sobbing and watching her in the crib. Mm-hmm. That's not really what new moms usually think mm-hmm. about a 7 month old.
In what way? What do you mean by that?
Oh, like if like, you know, she was crying and I would, yeah, I didn't really explain that. She'd be crying and I thought, oh, what if, you know, later on she is a drug addict or, mm-hmm. you know, hates us or does something horrible. Mm-hmm. Why am I even trying now? And that doesn't even make sense, but that's what I thought.
Yeah. At the start of thinking.
But yeah, I really resented her. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you have to have depression to feel resentment of a baby periodically. And I was embarrassed that I did resent her.
Mm-hmm. We don't normalize those feelings a lot, I think, in our culture.
Well, no, because it really doesn't go along with resenting your blessings. I mean, that's not, mm-hmm. it's just, we're supposed to count them, right. Not resent them. So, yeah, so I just felt like this big jerk and like, yeah. Hmm. But I will say that even though it was black, I didn't not pray. I didn't not read scriptures. And there were measures of comfort in that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know that I was taking full advantage of spirituality that I had built up to that point, or that I could have drawn on, because I just wasn't able to. I, you know, not that we can live off of spiritual reserves that we've established previously. I mean, I think you have to constantly nourish the spiritual side, whether you're doing that in an organized religion or, you know, whatever. If spirituality is something that's important to you, I think you need to constantly nourish that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love that idea of nourishing, you know, our spirituality. And I think that reminds me of, you know, just thinking of depression in general, that a lot of people look at depression as something that can be solved or cured just through the spiritual realm of our existence, you know, such as the praying or the attitude change, like we talked about, but that depression, if understood correctly, has many other realms, such as biology or, you know, all those other things. It's not just spiritual cures per se, that.
Right. And it's not that I don't believe in miraculous healings. I absolutely do. And I know, in fact, I've known people who have had cancer that they were not supposed to recover from and have lived decades longer, and it is miraculous. I also have two uncles who were diagnosed on different sides of the family, who were diagnosed with cancer and then died less than 2 months later. And it's not that people weren't praying for them. You know, it's just, I don't know that it's really in our hand. I personally don't think that God works like, okay, if X amount of people are praying for this, then I will grant it. But if it was only 39 people praying instead of 40, then that person will not have the healing. I don't think it's that. You know, faith is just that. We don't get to choose the outcome. We just have the faith that there will be something, and we don't know what that something is always. And so
did it ever feel to you like, you know, since you bring up the idea of miracles or miraculous healing, that somehow you resented God because you weren't being miraculously healed, or that you had to, you know, subject yourself to other means of healing other than just spiritual?
No, it wasn't. I didn't feel resentful There again is probably the guilt. I probably felt too guilty to be resentful,
right.
But I did feel, I don't know that I felt ignored because I could see that my family was being blessed because we were still functioning. But I felt like I knew that he was listening to my prayers and my pleadings. I just felt really irritated that nothing was changing, not irritated at him, but just like, why can't I see 2 years down the road? Why can't I feel something? And that was, I don't know if this is the experience of anyone else. But for me, the hardest thing about going through the harder depressive periods, because that's not to say that I've not experienced depression in the last 7 years since I've been on the medication. I have, it's just never gotten really bad. And by really bad, I mean, I want to off myself.
Right.
Why does that have to be the clincher? I don't know. But I can still function always. I feel like the antidepressants take out the lowest of the lows and keep me from bottoming out, so to speak. But that's not what we were talking about.
Well, just your relationship maybe with God and how, did you ever feel
it was just kind of,
what about my miracle or how about?
No, I don't think I ever felt that way. I just felt like, I don't even know that it was a why, like why me? Because that didn't make sense. Well, if it's why me, then why are there starving kids in Africa? Why do people have cancer? It wasn't a why me. It was just, I didn't feel like I could feel the spirit very strongly. And that was something that had, that I had really enjoyed during high school and college and mission and during the birth of my first daughter is feeling very close to God through the spirit. And this is what I was going to say. I don't know that this is the same for anyone else. It could, and hopefully it is only my experience. But I just didn't feel like I could feel the spirit as strongly or as frequently. And that was the part that was very frustrating to me. And I didn't feel like God was withholding the spirit from me. I didn't feel like it was that. It was just
like, it wasn't a punishment.
No, I didn't feel like it was a punishment. It was just, I couldn't feel it. And I missed that. I wanted that. And it wasn't that I never felt it. It just wasn't to the same degree and in the same amount that I had come to expect and love and
right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned having felt depression in the last 7 years at some level,
yeah.
Even though you're on the medication.
Yeah.
I'd like for you to talk about that because I think that one of the misconceptions is that, for an antidepressant to be successful for life to be successful is that we're never depressed. And of course,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I want that med.
Right. And depression is supposed to be a part of life in the sense of not clinical depression, but
right.
Just, when we think of that word, meaning more just normal bouts of sadness or of,
yeah,
just being down or kind of even moody a little bit. Those are kind of normal things that most of us feel from time to time.
I'm trying to think. I guess it would have been fall 2005, so what, about 5 years ago. And that's just one that comes to mind most readily because I'd been on the antidepressants since fall of 2003. Things been going peachy, didn't really see any signs of that. And then our family was going through some very stressful things. We had done a move a year earlier. There had been a career change. I had 3 kids at home. The oldest was 5, 6, I don't know, 6. Yeah. And nothing more stressful than I think an average family goes through. I mean, there were just certain things, and when you stay home all day with 3 kids, things are going to be stressful anyways. And then, my husband and I had gone out of town and our bathroom flooded, and that was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, because really that's not that big a deal to have. And it was the master bedroom, but it started in the bathroom anyway. And I came home from being out of town. We cleaned it up. We did it. And I just felt like I couldn't snap out of things, and I didn't hate myself and I didn't feel like a loser. Like everything was a little more in slow motion. Everything was just more difficult. And I could tell that it was depression because it was feelings that I hadn't felt. And it was feeling those most of the day, every day, or for at least some of the day for a period of more than 2 weeks. And it was only in hindsight that I thought, wow, I've been feeling this way for a month. This must be depression. And I thought, you have got to be kidding me. You know, so I thought about upping the dosage of my medication because that was something, you know, that, you know, I talked about with an OBGYN and, anyway, it was something we did, and it lasted for probably about 3 months. It coincided with the holidays, which was awesome. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't awesome. By awesome, I mean not awesome. but I felt very blessed that it was only 3 months and it didn't eliminate the depression entirely, but I could still function and I didn't bottom out, so to speak. It just made it so I could keep going. And it was much easier to handle being on the antidepressant.
Right.
So
did you increase the dose or anything, or did you just pass
I did not at the time. Since then we've moved again. And, since then though, in talking with the primary care physician that I have now, and he has mentioned, you know, this dosage is working, but you know, if you get to a point and it's a really stressful period, we can tweak the dosage. We don't have to do it permanently. We can do it for a couple months and evaluate. And so I feel like I have a good enough dialogue with my primary care physician that that's something I could feel comfortable, you know, bumping up if that were to happen again. At the time, I didn't have a primary care physician that I was assigned to. I mean, I could have looked one up and I don't know.
Right.
I mean, looking back, I wish I would have tweaked the dosage.
At that point,
I wish I would have, but I did not.
Okay.
So, and I made it through.
Right. So there's a lot of side effects that people talk about with antidepressants, and I'll tell you the ones that I hear about the most. There's probably three of them that I hear the most. One is weight gain. One is decrease in libido. And third is a numbing of feeling. In other words, now I went from feeling miserable to not feeling anything. So just kind of like zombie state type feeling.
The numbing, I don't know that I've ever had, because I feel more miserable and numb not when I'm not on the medication and being depressed.
Right.
So.
Okay. So it's not something like
weight gain, hard to tell. Never lost the weight after that third baby. So maybe, I don't know. Hard to differentiate that. I guess it's not baby weight if he's 6 years old now, but, maybe.
I do want to say that I think you look fabulous. I don't want you to portray yourself as. Oh,
thank you. Let's hang out. you know, so I don't know, because I didn't, you know, I was pregnant, so so I lost weight. I don't know if weight gain, but I haven't, you know, since kept gaining and gaining and gaining weight. I've just kind of maintained the same thing for a lot of years.
Okay.
So libido. That's tough for me to differentiate between being exhausted because I have four kids or if it's a medication. I think there has been with the medication. I definitely think that is a side effect, and I'd be interested at some point down the road, maybe once there are no children in my house, to see if going off would, you know, kind of amp up things in the bedroom. but for me, because it's not that I'm never, ever, ever interested in having intimate relations with my husband.
Right.
I'm just not that interested. And, you know, I don't know because I only have myself to compare myself to. So I don't know. I do know that I have, talked to friends, that has really been a problem. And they don't like that side effect, the loss of libido.
Sure.
I keep not referring to it.
No.
They used to want to have sex. Now they don't, and they don't like that. I kept talking around it, but that's what we're really saying here.
Right.
and I have talked with several friends. In fact, I can think of a friend whose husband was depressed, and he was on antidepressants, and it was working, except for that was the main side effect. And that just wasn't something he was willing to live with. Luckily, my husband and I are able to work that out. And that's not, you know.
It doesn't sound like a big relational issue between the two.
No, it has not been. So,
and it doesn't sound even like if it is affecting you, it's not affecting you to the point of no libido or
no, it's not affecting me. No, it's not. And like I said, I don't, unless I were to go off the medication for a period of several months, I would be able to tell, okay, is this because I stay home with kids, four kids all day? And the last thing I want to do is have anyone touch me at night,
right.
or is that the medication?
That's a whole other podcast,
and
right?
You know, just to find that out, not willing to test it by going off the medication at this point. Right. So,
yeah. How has your husband dealt with the fact that you've stayed on the medicine longer term than maybe you had originally anticipated? And
you know, at first he was surprised because I had told him, I kind of want to try going off it, and he even mentioned, "Hey, didn't." I thought you were going to try going off it. And
do you get the sense it bothers him that you're on it?
Right now? No, not at all. Maybe initially, I don't know if bothered so much. It's just I had told him my expectations, and so those kind of became his. And so then it was more like an informational thing. He's been very supportive throughout. That said, to the best of his ability, you know, if... You know, just as if someone's trying to describe to me exactly what chemotherapy feels like, I'm not going to get it because I have not been through it. I can compare it to similar things, but not. And luckily for him, you know, everybody gets down, but he has not gone through a depression that we know of. Right. And so, you know, you can only get it on a certain level. But yeah, so I told him, you know, I'm interested in trying to go off. And so he brought it up. Oh, I thought you were going to try to do that. And I said, I don't know that we should mess with a good thing, you know? And he's agreed. I mean, we joke that I should be a poster child to Paxil CR. And, sometimes I'll joke, yeah, this and this and this happened. But thanks to Paxil CR, well, maybe you could get them to underwrite Mormon stories. I don't know. anyway, so we joke about that, but it's working. And at this point, I'm not willing to mess with something that's working really well.
Right. What about, like you mentioned, you know, stigmas at church or with friends, or do you find that you're readily available or you know, able to talk about being on an antidepressant, or do you feel like doesn't?
I am now, but it was not that way for the first several years. When I first went on, and even after I'd been on for a while, I remember my husband was getting ready to have a weekly phone conversation with his parents, and I don't remember the exact thing, but I just remember saying, well, don't tell them that I'm on antidepressants. I don't want them to know. Mm-hmm. So I did feel that stigma. I was okay with my family knowing because my family had it, but you know, even though we were married and his family's my family, et cetera, et cetera, I didn't feel comfortable with it. Like, I don't want them to know. I don't want them to know that I do that. And then, this is going to sound kind of silly, but actually when I went to Paxil CR, Paxil, a lot of times is prescribed as an anti-anxiety medication. Uh-huh. And for some reason, my own sweet pointed little head, I felt like there was not as much of a stigma against anxiety as there was against
depression.
And so I felt comfortable saying, oh yeah, I'm on Paxil. Cause you know, maybe people at the time just thought, it's for anxiety. And that wasn't as bad as having depression. So, well, it's pathetic. It's not interesting, but thank you for saying that. So I wasn't comfortable. Now I am. Now I feel okay about it because, I don't know. I've just come to terms with this is a part of who I am and this is okay. And I do feel like sometimes it helps people to know, wait, you take antidepressants? I take them too. He said, I know, isn't it great? You know, but I think it helps people feel not quite so isolated, but I was not there initially, right. Nor was I for a period of years. You know, it's not like.
Do you find among your, I don't know where you're saying that these people come up, is it more in your ward family or in your community at large that you are finding other women readily are on antidepressants?
Yeah, both. Mm-hmm. It's still not something that's talked about a lot, but, I'm comfortable talking about it. I I don't know that I advertise it, but if it comes up in the course conversation. I don't withhold that information, and I'm comfortable sharing it. So,
any other moments like you had at BYU where somebody gets up and says something like, "Oh, just get over it," and any messages?
No, that's the one that I remember the most. I can't really think of any coming to mind. I know that I have come across women, who just, medication for any kind of mental illness, but I have come across that in the church, but that's so prevalent in our culture as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that that's only.
That it's a Mormon issue.
No, I don't think so. But in my experience, and arguably my experience is different. You know, I'm one of those people who every ward that I've lived in, I've really liked. I've had good friends because I decide when I move someplace that I'm going to love it because it takes too much energy to not love it. Mm-hmm. Hey, ask the PAX LCR talking, huh? No, I'm and so, you know, to a certain extent, I just choose that I'm going to find a support network wherever I move, because it's easier for me to have supportive friends and to make supportive friends. So I try to do that. Yeah, that's kind of boring, huh?
No.
Not really fodder for crisis of faith.
Well, okay, so moving along that, since this is more for probably, I'm guessing mostly Mormons are going to be listening to this, what would you say are some of the themes or maybe unintentional issues that do come up that are more specifically Mormon that maybe people struggle with, that are struggling with either depression or postpartum? And we already talked kind of about motherhood and how that's like the highest calling. And,
right,
you know, if you don't kind of engage that naturally, how you might feel maybe less than. What else do you feel are some issues that might come up for people?
You know, I think a lot of times it's hard to recognize exactly what it is, especially if you have not. My situation, I don't want to say that it's unique, like I'm the only one, but I do feel like I kind of had a leg up. On the depression thing, yeah, I didn't know what it was as a teenager the first time it struck when my boyfriend broke up with me at 16. But in subsequent times, I could identify it. This is depression. This is what depression feels like. I was kind of choosing not to after the birth of my second daughter, because after our first kid was born, oh, I don't get postpartum depression. Isn't this wonderful? I don't get it. And so there was some denial there. Absolutely. But I think it's hard to identify, oh, this is what I'm feeling. And again, there for me, that 2 week benchmark, if it's daily for about 2 weeks, this is not something that it's because you're losing your testimony, although you could be, this isn't something that you need to pray more, although there's nothing that says that you can't pray more. This is something that could have a deeper root, and it's at least worth exploring. If you don't have depression, fabulous. All you did was waste a copay or whatever. But I wish that sometimes there could be more dialogue, but that there again, culturally, there isn't, both a Mormon culture and non-Mormon. I don't know that, you know, we're going to start seeing Relief Society ward meetings specifically geared toward depression, nor do I know if that's a good fit, because it's not a one, as we mentioned before, it's not a one size fits all disease. And my experience is not going to be the same as everyone else's. And whereas I had a really good support system, I had my mom who had been through it, who told me what some warning signs were once I did see the signs and was not doing anything, encouraged me to get help, was very supportive of my husband, and we're here for you. I really had a great support network, and not everyone has that. And I think it's particularly hard if, you know, what if you were raised by that guy who said, it's all in your head. And so now you're either his daughter or his son. And why can't your wife snap out of it? You know, why? Yeah, you have a baby. So what? billions of women have had babies, you know, leg up. This is what you were born to do.
Here in Kansas, we say cowboy up.
Oh, right. My bad.
Or cowgirl up, I guess. Yeah, so kind of.
So I think just the misunderstanding of what depression is. It really is. It's really an illness, and it's not, you know, I hope I'm not referring to it to death, but I'm not comparing it to diabetes and cancer because I know it's not the same, but just as I don't think that anyone would treat cancer by only praying about it. I mean, I would think they would certainly consult a medical professional and get some ideas.
Right.
I think you need to do that with any kind of mental illness as well, with depression. And I think it is talked about more than it used to be.
Sure.
And by used to be, I mean, even 10 years ago, but whereas it's, I don't know, acceptable, but people are more accepting of depression or anxiety, but then you still have these big stigmas against, you know, other parts of mental illness, like bipolar disorder or schizoid affective disorder or things like that. And that's still kind of, you know, really scary to everybody. But I think in a ward family setting, you're kind of like,
Right. Well, and along with some of the stigmas too, I think this idea that you talked about it being you know, the people who are in your life relationally, can make such a huge difference.
Yeah.
As far as, I get a lot of questions about, well, how do I explain this to my husband, for instance, who just doesn't seem to get it, or who maybe is one of those people who's saying, just snap out of it, and how hurtful and harmful that can be to the process, even though I don't think that's the intention of the spouse.
No.
I think that,
well,
people,
it could
are,
be, but
yeah,
hopefully,
yeah.
It's, hopefully not. It's not.
And I think most people, when they're saying snap out of it, they're in essence trying to fix something. They're trying to give you advice. It's just not helpful advice.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that I do, I'm not saying that this is a great recommendation, but you know, and I realize that Googling something is not research, but you can go to pretty much any medical website, and they're going to give you that 2-week benchmark. And so I think if you can go and say, look, honey, this is me and I've done this, and you know, or if you're comfortable going to your primary care physician and saying, okay, it's been 2 weeks, or it's been 3 weeks, or it's been 3 months, you know, and you're meeting those requirements, you can give them a written thing that says, look, I am meeting these things. This is what depression is. And I think that is very readily available. Yeah, I happened to come across it in a magazine because the internet wasn't around then.
Right.
But you can find that really almost anywhere.
Yeah, that's now. Absolutely true.
I mean, it's very readily available information.
Look up signs of depression or just depression in general.
Yeah, and if you're finding, hey, that's kind of me. In fact, there's even, who is it? Dr. Burns, I think he does. I don't know. He's written books on like the Feeling Good Handbook and things like that. And he has like a depression checklist that you can go through, and he kind of rates you on a scale of where you are on a depression scale, you know, mild to moderate. And that's, you know, that's one example, but
you can go in and ask to take the Beck Depression Inventory.
Okay,
that's
there you
another
go.
One, or you can maybe even probably Google that and take it yourself. On
yeah,
it.
And I think, you know, if then you can show your spouse or your mom or your sister or whoever it is, hopefully you have at least one person that can be a support network where you can say, look, I unfortunately am meeting these criteria, and so, you know, I need to get help. But it's hard because sometimes you don't even have the motivation to do that. And at least for me, there was quite a bit of denial involved in it. If I didn't admit I had depression, then I didn't have to treat it, and I didn't have to play what I perceived as the medication roulette.
Right. Well, and that's another, I think, stigma is, you know, you hear the media will sometimes exaggerate or at least make statements that can feel very provocative in the sense of, you know, mass people on antidepressants, you know, and right. I think Mormon women in general have been kind of stigmatized in this, you know, Utah has the highest level of antidepressant use or, right. you know, things like that. And, yeah, there probably are more, antidepressants than ever being given out today. Yeah. Of course, it's also being diagnosed, thank goodness, more right. than ever correctly. And it doesn't mean that people didn't have depression in the past, but we didn't have the tools to either diagnose right. it or to treat it. And then people live a lot longer this day and age than they did in the past as well. And we're not working out in the farm and getting our daily exercise.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of different factors as to why I think depression is more diagnosable today. I mean, we just aren't, the knowledge about it is just so much more than well, ever before. So,
yeah. And, this is kind of a random side note, but I remember in college being fascinated reading in a literature anthology, the short story called, The Yellow Wallpaper. And just thinking it was absolutely fascinating and wonderful. And so I suggested it, as a reading for a book group several years ago. We were reading some short stories and I reread it, having remembered only that I liked it. And I just wept. It is raging postpartum depression that it is being written about. And at the time when I initially read it, well, I wasn't married, it was earlier in college, and just thinking, oh, the writing is wonderful in this book, you know, this woman who's trapped in a room with a yellow wallpaper, and then reading it and going, oh, and just, you know, just realizing, you know, because it had been 15 years or 10 years or whatever in between the two readings, that there had been so much more information to come out, I could realize, oh my goodness, this is actually a story about postpartum depression. Right. Not, yeah.
Right. And you can find that in literature or in journals or in things if you go back and read those kinds of things. But yeah, there wasn't a label to go along with that at that time. So that's really interesting.
One thing I will say, and this could get edited out, I don't know. but one thing I will that really has helped me is, you know, in church, the Mormon church, we talk a lot about the atonement of the Savior. Mm-hmm. And, I wouldn't say that, during that really awful year that I thought about the atonement a lot. You know, it wasn't top of mind. I mean, of course, I was going to church every week and taking the sacrament. And so I was referring to the atonement of the Savior a lot. But finally realizing that those horrible, negative, self-loathing thoughts, I mean, for some reason in my mind, even though I'd grown up in the church and served a mission, I kept thinking of the atonement as covering for sins. Mm-hmm. And finally realizing that those horrible feelings of self-loathing and self-hatred, that those could be overcome by placing those at the feet of the Savior. And that was very comforting to me. Did it lift my depression? No, it did not. Mm-hmm. But knowing that that was available to me really soothed my soul. I mean, at the risk of sounding cheesy, but it really did. It really gave me hope. Mm-hmm. Thinking about a resurrection and having what I would call normal brain gave me a lot of hope because I really wanted to get that normal brain and smaller thighs. But those were two things that while they didn't, you know, portend a miraculous healing, you know, and didn't make didn't make it go away. Those were things that helped to know that I could place all those feelings of I'm not good enough, I'm a failure, I'm failing my kids, I'm failing my husband, I'm failing myself, I can't do anything right. I could, if I chose to, place those at the feet of the Savior, and he was waiting and willing to take those for me if I offered those to him. So that was something that was and continues to be helpful because I think something that is kind of unique to the postpartum depression with Mormons is not the guilt, but just feeling like, but I shouldn't feel this way. You know, the Savior loves me. The church is true. I'm a Mormon. I'm not allowed to have these bad thoughts about myself or about anyone else, or get irritated with my kids, you know, and, so you feel really bad, like almost like you need to repent of having depression, which like, you don't repent of having cancer, so, you know, but I don't know, sometimes that gets all kind of mingled up and with the lack of serotonin or too much serotonin. I don't know. I'm just making it up as I go.
Well, you cheered up a little bit there with that. So I can tell that that's pretty, you know, close to your heart. I, not to put you on the spot, but why do you feel like we might have to edit that out? Is it?
Oh, no, I, no, I would only say that just because, I only say that because I told you this before, but your listeners don't know. I read some comments on a previous interview that was done where I felt like some of the listeners kind of threw her under the bus, you know, for mentioning her belief in the, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't listen to the interview, the church so much, but you know, and so I just
concerned maybe about some of the listeners, respecting your,
right. Like, right. You know, but I really do believe that. I really do. And I, you know, do I believe in that more than I believe in the antidepressants? Yes, but I'm still not going to go off them.
I love it.
No, that would be the only reason for editing it out, just to make it so it doesn't sound too churchy or, I don't know, too Sunday schoolish. But unfortunately, some of those Sunday school answers actually work sometime. Mm-hmm. And that's the bummer of it all. Mm-hmm. Or the goodness of it all. I don't know.
Well, no, I think that spirituality is so important, like you said, in everybody's life at some level, whether that's through organized religion or through some other means that people can find that resonates for them. I think that's what's so important about.
And yeah, and for me, it is an absolute and literal belief in a savior, in Jesus Christ. But I could see where for someone else who that doesn't work for them, you know, being able to lay those feelings at the feet of something else, being able to disperse them to the wind or give them back to nature or, you know, free them from the soul. Just do something with those negative, those toxic things and choose. Because as I mentioned, if I'm going to take advantage of the atonement, I have to choose to give those things away and he will take them from me. So if I don't have a belief in that, which I do, but if I didn't, I'm imagining that it would be like choosing to take those toxic, black, horrible feelings and let go of them and either give them to a higher power or just disperse them to nature. I mean, to the universe, to, you know, to someplace to decide that they will not be bound inside your body anymore and to just choose to release those thoughts. And I don't think you have to be a Mormon to do that and to find some measure of relief from from getting rid of those things.
That's very well
and
said.
You know, I also want to say, just kind of disclaimer, of course, I've referred to medication, you know, like it's candy, which by the way, I love candy too. Really ridiculously love it. But you know, that it's not the answer for everyone. So I'm not trying to say it is. I'm just telling my Mormon story.
I love that. Well, and I think for many, at least what the research shows is for the majority of people, the combination between medicine and some type of talk therapy, whether it's cognitive behavioral or something along those lines, is usually the best form of treatment, along with good exercise, good sleeping habits, and good nutrition. So those are all, you know, probably the best treatment courses for any type of depression. But there are people who find all different kinds of combinations of one or more of all those things. But I think, you know, the spiritual component is important as well. And just, you know, to put my view out there is, for me, this is Mormon stories. And so, you know, part of that is interviewing people who are more traditionally tied to the faith. And that is also people who are maybe not traditionally tied to the faith or who have left the faith or are somewhere in between. That to me is all Mormon stories. So, you know, I think that that's hopefully what we can do here is find commonalities with one another, regardless of where we are on that spectrum.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing your Mormon story with us.
thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah. And I was, just so you know, I was going to ask you, you know, what are the main principles or doctrines that help you? And I think you did a really good job kind of wrapping that up there at the end. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.